How's it going? And welcome to episode 260 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Thank you all for listening and or watching. We got a great show as we finish out the month of June, Kevin, and we head into, well, next week's the holiday weekend. We still got a normal weekend to kind of just wade our way through what is a terrible landscape of pitching options, as we just talked about before I hit the record button. But how's it going with you?
Oh, it's going well, Adam. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Great to be here. Halfway point. Many teams have played their 81st game. Not everybody, but I would say this weekend would be considered the halfway point of the season. So double our stats and see where we're going to be.
That's,
right?
That's how it works, right? I think that's how it works.
That's exactly how it works.
Well, in a lot of the minor leagues, there are like halfway point champions. This is how they determine who's going to make the playoffs or even their championship. You win the first half and you make it to the finals. It doesn't matter what you do in the second half. And I think at the AAA level and even the AA level, that makes a lot of sense, just because it's like, actually, you know what? Across the board, you just don't.
The
rosters are completely different. So you deserve to kind of win something in the first half before you lose all of your players to, you might not ever make it. Because you don't know what your team's going to look like at the end of the actual season.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to Oklahoma. We had a fun College World Series that ended earlier in the week.
So, I mean, there's baseball all over the place. It's not just soccer happening across the continent. They're still very, very much so in the middle of baseball season.
You know, Adam, I am very much a person that, yes, I pay attention to things, and I'm getting into like the labor stuff and MLB. Yeah, I pay a little bit of attention to it, but I'm sure that it makes perfect sense to you, because in the off season, I don't even like to talk about projected landing spots. I'm like, no, I'll react when we know where it is. Guessing doesn't do me any good. And I feel the same way with this. I do understand there are things happening, but I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it because we have absolutely no idea, and nothing we do or none of our ideas, and they should do this, they should do that. They don't care what we think. So why are we wasting our energy on that type of thing, you know? But at the same time, it is kind of intriguing seeing how some of these decisions may be being affected by what may come after this season for this upcoming trade deadline that is now only about a little over a month away.
That is an excellent point. It's just like there are decisions that are going to be made in a month based on what ownership, what GMs think,
scouts think,
what they could think could happen. Right. Because there's so many thoughts and ideas being thrown out there, suggestions, so many proposals, rumors, and it's, you don't know what's going to stick.
And the reason I bring all of that up was you made the point a couple of minutes ago, there's all kinds of baseball out there. I saw a post yesterday. If they miss games, my love for baseball, I said, no, not your love for baseball. Your love for Major League Baseball, should diminish. Sure. You should still love baseball and go find it somewhere else. And I am a huge proponent of that.
I mean, we saw this happen. We saw this happen during the last.
We'll start doing our historical drafts again.
The historical drafts, the KBO, all the KBO watch parties that were happening. Obviously, college is still happening as well. Go pick up a wiffle ball bat and build a field in your backyard.
That's where I'm at. There's all kinds of baseball to enjoy. We don't have to pay attention to this labor stuff. That was where I was getting at.
I talked to so many other people that are like fans of other sports, and so many people are like, grew up with basketball. I love basketball, but I can't stand the NBA. but mm-hmm. I love college basketball or
I'm that way
NFL. Like there are,
I am that way with the NFL. I have not watched it at all in many, many years. And I used to watch every single game. Yeah. And I have always known in the back of my mind that Major League Baseball is as bad as the NFL, that they are. And at some point I may have to make that decision.
You love the sport. You know? It doesn't yep. mean you have to love the, you know, the game. No, you love the game, but you don't have to
love the league,
the organization that's putting it on.
Right.
Just working. It's like working for any other, it's like working for a company. They're like, I like what I do, but I don't like who I do it for.
Exactly.
Well, for now, We have
Major League Baseball.
Major League Baseball, and that's where all of our fantasy teams still live to at least through the 2026 season. So let's continue to drive through and talk about that and the things that are happening that they're going to impact how we're going to spend our fab dollars. Starting off here with a couple of reliever notes, but not necessarily closer notes. Still, somebody you. People that you might have been either stashing or considering. First in Atlanta, Robert Suarez hits the IL with the dreaded right elbow inflammation. The Atlanta replaces him with Hurston Waldrep. And then Cincinnati loses Tony Santillan with a, quote, significant oblique injury. Terry Francona expects him to be out for quite some time. Either one of the elbow inflammation and significant obliques, guys that are obviously stashes for their respective closers on their teams, who like are either one of these guys, are you even paying attention to them from here on out?
Well, no, not them, but yeah. Who takes their spot? Because both of these situations, right? Rafael Iglesias, we think is safe, but he has given up a run in three of his past four appearances. So there may be some rumblings there, or there may have been, with as well as Robert Suarez performed earlier in the season when Iglesias was on the IL. So Dylan Lee, I think, would be the next man up in that situation if Iglesias does continue to struggle. And I didn't put anything for Cincinnati's bullpen in my notes for later in the show because that situation is just something that I really don't want to mess with. There are some leagues where I am so behind in saves where I do have to try to figure out some things. But even in those leagues, I'm done trying to figure out Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Atlanta, we've had this conversation before. This is a broken record. Iglesias struggles. Okay. Dylan Lee, it seems like the guy who's going to come in at that sit. But there's also,
and then Iglesias will run eight straight up without giving up a hit. And we know it's coming.
Atlanta won't give anybody a save opportunity for three.
Right.
yes. But this difference this year is that Atlanta is actually good and they're at the top of their division. So all the talks about Iglesias being a trade target that never happened probably won't happen this year, or at least they won't be as strong because they're going to be the ones probably looking for bullpen help if they do anything at the trade deadline themselves. Nobody they bring in is probably overtaking Iglesias's spot in the closer position. You could bring in somebody stronger than Lee, but so now there's a little bit of gray area there. But I don't expect them to go out and get a, you know, if Boston trades Chapman or somebody, you know, some other top end closer ends up being traded, I don't think they're getting traded to Atlanta at the deadline. But yeah, Cincinnati. Yeah. If you can avoid it, just avoid it. speaking of, somehow I talked about my Red Sox there. So we'll just jump into this one. We talked about the Red Sox last week, losing some middle infield help. They lose even more with Marcelo Meyer getting, hitting the IL with a forearm injury, man. What is the guy to do with an infield situation with my Red Sox, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm not sure, Adam, because I expected I expected Monasterio to get some more playing time, and he did for a couple of games there, and now all of a sudden they call up someone I've never heard of before today, Adam. Sung Chae Cheng is the starting shortstop for your Boston Red Sox tonight. So as usual, when we're talking Boston, I'm going to defer to you because I know absolutely nothing about Chang and his seven major league plate appearances.
Yeah, I mean, those seven major league plate appearances came last year and did nothing with them whatsoever. Granted, he's starting at shortstop, but he is not somebody I expect to see in there on an everyday basis. He came over from Pittsburgh. Did he come over in? I can't remember how he actually came over. I guess I can look at transaction logs, but I don't expect him to be an everyday guy. But you know what? With the situation that we find ourselves in as Red Sox fans, I'm not going to be terribly surprised. And I mean, the one thing that has come true is Anthony Seigler is the everyday second baseman, whether or not whether we like it or not. And he's doing fine in that role. But we talked about him last week and whether or not that would be the case. And he's set himself in that situation. And now with one less option in the infield, there's no real reason to see that change anytime soon. Only hasn't let off since those first two games, since getting called back up. But still in the game, in the starting lineup every single day against righties, lefties, you name it. So Seigler seems to be somebody that's got some staying power, as we alluded to last week.
Not any stolen base attempts yet, but he's been getting on base. It's only been seven games, so he's been getting on base, and he does have that history in the minor league. So I still like him for speed going forward as long as he's getting this everyday playing time.
Yeah. You know, Monasterios could still get, you know, I'm hoping it's not we talk about it all the time with the, you know, you don't like to platoon your shortstop, but the Red Sox have pretty much been doing that for quite a bit, even when before Meyer's injury, not like a strict righty lefty platoon, but he wasn't playing every day either. He was getting days off, especially against lefties before the injury. And so maybe this turns into a situation where Monasterio keeps his short side of the platoon and Chang ends up being, you know, the strong side of the platoon at shortstop, like Meyer basically was. And if that's the case, we'll see, you know, if he can hold it. But I expect to see Monasterio in there a little bit more than just against lefties.
Okay, that's because this bears monitoring over the weekend, because I feel like If Chang isn't going to get playing time, why did they even call him up? And why isn't Monasterio in the game Friday, right? So I know he's typically going to play more against lefties, but he had played against three of the previous six righties the previous week. If we see another start or two Saturday or Sunday from Chang, there may be something here.
Yeah, there could be. Monasterio got those three starts, though. Right before they called up Seigler, and as soon as they called up Seigler, Seigler kind of ran with it, right? Based on that pattern alone, you could be right as far as like just keeping an eye on whether or not. Now, he's batting ninth at the bottom of the order, and I haven't seen if he did anything today. But, who's to say anybody's? I mean, anybody except for Caleb Durbin is going to do anything for the Red Sox right now.
He has been caught stealing on Friday. Chang. Yeah. Okay. And that's what I was about to say. His fantasy value would come from the speed, 20 stolen bases in just 110 games. And 10 so far this season in 64 games. So that would be what we're looking for. A little moderate power, but he's never had more than 13 in a season. The speed would be what I'm looking at least initially here starting this. Like I said, this is the first time I've looked at Chang.
Sure.
But that would be my interest. And the fact that they did turn him loose tonight, that's a positive. The fact he got caught is a negative, but I don't think they'd shut him down after one attempt.
Yeah, fair. Well, I'm gonna jump, since we're talking about my Red Sox. Now let's go all the way to the bottom of the outline and jump to your Royals, because a lot going on with your Royals this week as well. First, the bad news: Michael Garcia finally hits the IL with a strained hand. They're kind of, you know, kind of toying us along here for a long time. They did the same thing with Bobby Witt, just kind of dragged their feet on what they're going to do. But luckily, Bobby Witt started today on Friday. They avoided his IL stint like he said he was trying to. The other bad news here, though, is that Cole Reagans is expected to have some sort of surgery on his elbow, or to fix his elbow. The specifics on what type of surgery that would be are still unknown, at least from what I could tell. If you know something more, please let us know. But what is the situation, especially in the infield, for your Royals with Garcia officially hitting the IL and Bobby Witt obviously avoiding it?
Yeah, it's been mostly as we thought. Nick Lofton has settled into playing every day versus righties and lefties. He has been at third base in Michael Garcia's spot. Josh Rojas has been, he was called up on Monday when he was the corresponding move for Michael Garcia. And then he's been the lineup at shortstop this evening. We've seen Tyler Tolbert at shortstop. We talked a little bit about that last week when this injury first came up, that was a possibility. But I think they probably do, now that they've called Rojas up. I know that Tolbert had 3 starts at shortstop out of 4 games since this call up. Tolbert, throughout the minor leagues for the Royals, he was always an outfielder. I feel like maybe they want Josh Rojas to play in shortstop, because Bobby Witt Jr. is in the lineup, but a designated hitter. Not a lot of news on how long we expect that to remain the case. So right now, Nick Lofton is the big beneficiary. We'll see Tyler Tolbert and possibly Josh Rojas get some at-bats. But as soon as Bobby Witt Jr. goes back to playing shortstop, those will dry up as well.
Let me ask this, and a lot of people wonder this, especially in September when teams used to do this a lot more often. Bobby Witt Jr. was injured for 6 days straight.
Yeah.
Why not just put him on the IL and give him 4 extra days?
Yeah, I no idea. And, you know, I'm more upset about the Michael Garcia because of our game. Right, because he had missed 3 games. Yes. After exiting a game, and he played on Sunday. All right, I don't need to replace him in my lineup. Yeah. He plays on Monday as well. We feel good about it, and now he's locked in. So even if you did have somebody to replace him with, you couldn't do it for the rest of the first half of the week in NFBC formats. And in one spot, I had actually dropped my backup third baseman because he was back in. So I had to leave him in the lineup for the weekend. But yeah, that was a rough one as far as timing. We've had a few of those recently. It's almost like some of these teams are like, hey, let's mess with these fantasy guys. Let's wait till they lock their lineups before we make these announcements.
I mean, there's got to be some other underlying things. I'm like, some players have to have more pull than others when they're deciding, hey, no, listen, I can avoid the IL. But like, when you get to the point that Bobby Witt was, where you're missing 6 straight games, there's only 4 more games that you would have missed if you were just on the IL taking care of yourself. Is there a financial reason? Is there anything in their contract that like says like, if you avoid the IL, X amount of bonus points or whatever? I don't know any of that. But like, it's curious, right? It's just curious as to why these decisions end up getting made. And if you're not going to put Bobby Witt back in there at shortstop, again, why not just give him the weekend to, you know, chill out and just make sure everything is where it needs to be? Come back on Tuesday, right? But he's back. That's great. And he's back on Friday, so you can make your adjustments if you were sitting him through the week because you weren't sure the first half of your week. So at least on the Bobby Witt front, it's not the same as your Michael Garcia situation, as you just talked about.
Yeah, it may have something to do with standings. I it's not. I thought maybe it's because Kansas City's at home this weekend and they're about to go on a long road trip. Let's let the fans at least see him hit at looking at this, but at, none of that looks right. And yes, the Kansas City Royals are only 5.5 games out of an American League wild card. That is the furthest back of an American League wild card that anyone is, tied with your Red Sox and the Los Angeles Angels. So actually, your Red Sox, they have the same amount of wins, but your Red Sox have less losses. They're only 4.5 out of a playoff spot.
Play two less games.
As we know, what this means is they have to jump every other team.
Right.
So I know a lot of these teams, well, every American League team can say we're within 5.5 games of the playoffs right now. Mm-hmm. But those teams that are 5.5 back have to jump everybody.
Everybody else. Yeah. It feels like a lot further. Well, speaking of one of the teams that doesn't have to do as much jumping, the Toronto Blue Jays are only one game back of the American League wild card spot, but they had a lot going on this week as well. They saw the return of Shane Bieber back into their rotation mix. They activated Adam Macko while DFAing newly reacquired Simeon Woods Richardson, who is we talked about him last week. He just rejoined the Blue Jays after being DFA'd by the Twins. And they also called up hitting prospect Sean Keyes, who's been on a little bit of a power tear himself in the minor leagues before this call-up. So with all this happening in Toronto, what are the major takeaways that you've seen so far?
Well, the pitching rotation, I think in spite of all of that, is fairly stable because of getting Shane Bieber back. So Cease, Bieber, Yesavage, Gausman, Patrick Corbin sticking in that rotation as the only lefty, and that probably has something to do with it. Macko is in the bullpen at the moment as one of only two lefties in that bullpen. So we may see quite a few innings out of him, or, you know, 2 to 3 appearances per week. They may lean on him a little bit. So I do, but I think that's pretty much set the pitching there. Ernie Clement bouncing back from missing 4 out of 6 games with an injury, not going on the IL, playing a couple in between, a couple more injured games. He's been back for a couple days. As long as he's healthy, then getting him back kind of balances out with the who were we just talking about?
Sean Keyes, I mentioned he's
Keyes, yes.
But he's expected to come up on Saturday.
Recording
right. Is on Friday. Yep.
Yeah, I heard all your pitching names and I missed. Yeah. Sean Keyes is extremely intriguing to me in that he's like their 14th ranked prospect of the organization. Sure. His projections are absolutely horrendous. He's projected for barely over a 200 batting average, and it makes sense. I mean, even last season in the minor leagues, he did not hit for average. All of a sudden this year he is, and he is similar to some of the other prospects and minor leaguers we've talked about recently. It looks like this season, 23, 24 years old, really coming into that game power. Now, we don't know if he's going to be able to keep the gains he's made in terms of strikeout rate and batting average, on base percentage, all of that that goes together
that
one way or another. Sure. Yeah, we don't know how that. And I understand why the projections, because a bulk of his minor league at bats are that 500 plate appearance season where he hit like 217. So, but now all of a sudden, like Jacob Gonzalez, like Manuel Pena, a couple of these guys we've been talking about recently, he's really growing into that game power. If he can hit at all, I'm very intrigued here. And the strikeout rates and low batting averages in the minors might keep the price down to where we could acquire him if he gets in the game on Saturday this weekend. And if hopefully have room to not have to put him in our lineup, just see if he's going to be able to make this jump to major league pitching.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. Of course, he's still expected to be called up for Saturday, and he still obviously has to get into the game on Saturday in some capacity. The question really comes down to is, okay, he gets into the game on Saturday. What role does he play? What kind of playing time are we expecting out of him in general? Obviously, with the power and all that, that's nice and that's intriguing. But where does he really kind of fit in as a corner infield type of player for the Blue Jays at this point?
Exactly, because I saw some, you know, a little bit of speculation from Toronto fans is he going to play designated hitter? Well, not while George Springer is healthy. And I know Springer is not having the season that he had last season, but over the past couple of weeks, he's been George Springer, it looks like. So yeah, I don't see him losing playing time while he's healthy. So yes, that is the big question. Yeah, over the past couple of weeks, Springer's hitting 280 with 3 home runs, 3 stolen bases. He's not going to lose time.
No. And neither is Okamoto or obviously Vlad at the corners. So it's right. Like, I don't know this to be true, but the stereotype, of course, of a corner infielder is like, well, you're not going to have as much flexibility to move into other more complicated or more difficult, demanding, that's the better word, more demanding positions. So we'll have to wait and see what he comes in here. Maybe he's just in there to relieve these three guys and give them a day off and kind of rotate between the three positions. And maybe this is just a quick little cup of coffee and then he's right back down to AAA. So, just have to kind of see how it works out on Saturday and Sunday, what kind of playing time he gets in those 2 days. Unfortunately, would have liked to have seen him get his debut, obviously, on Monday or Tuesday. So you had a little bit more insight due to the situation at hand. But, we play the cards that were dealt. All right. Well, on a smaller scale, Cleveland called up their own prospect, catching prospect Cooper Engle. Does that have any bearing on the what they're doing behind the plate for the Guardians?
I don't think so. I think we're going to see Patrick Bailey most days.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we basically have been since being acquired from San Francisco, whether or not he's useful in your fantasy league or not, but he's there pretty much every, as far as catchers go, he's pretty much there most of the time.
And Hedges is so good defensively. He's going to get his couple starts a week. So yeah, I don't see much here for Engle.
Yeah. Similar question as the Keys. It's like, where does he kind of fit in? Why are you holding on to three catchers? plus you have, David Fry could always put the stuff back and put the equipment back on in an actual pinch. So you've really got 3.5 catchers on your major league roster. I don't get it, but, he is one of their, top 15 prospects, at least on the hitting side. So give the guy a chance. Another team with doing a whole lot this past week, both on the good, mostly on the bad. The Chicago Cubs, they welcome back Matthew Boyd and they lose Ben Brown. And they trade for David Peterson and they lose Edward Cabrera. So a lot happening with the Chicago Cubs rotation options. Are these ultimately net neutral as far as like breathing bodies in the rotation? Or is there any kind of mix and match that you think the Cubs could possibly be doing with their, additions more than their subtractions?
I think this looks like they're just going to have to roll with Imanaga, Assad, Boyd, Ray, Peterson. That's where we're at for a bit, the way it looks. Jacob Webb, after having that blown save last weekend, he does have a win this week. Trent Thornton got the only save that they've had this week. He's a guy I liked as a starter years ago when he was coming up with Toronto, I believe, Trent Thornton. Liked him back then. I don't think he's going to get many ninth inning appearances. I think it's Webb and Diobar right now. But I think what, you know, the Cubs, when they have injuries like this, they have to make their moves. But usually things are fairly stable and pretty easy for us to figure out. And it appears like, yes, there are changes here, but we know what they are.
Yeah, and Ben Brown hits the IL with a neck strain.
That's just weird.
With the
lump in his neck, and it's the same thing he dealt with before, and he missed a lot of time with it. This is very concerning for a fan of Ben Brown. You know,
yeah, just because of the repeat, you know, nature of the injury, and then Edward Cabrera leaving with the left hamstring strain of his own. I would venture to guess, I mean, David Peterson made his debut after being traded. He did not. He has not made his debut for the Cubs yet. He didn't pitch today, did he? Is he slated? Because I agree, Peterson's obviously in this rotation. They're kind of desperate for the situation, but does Peterson, assuming he just kind of keeps doing what he was doing when he was with the Mets, be the first man out if any of these injuries end up being not as severe as we're, you know, afraid they might be?
Probably. Even Assad was in this rotation before they acquired Peterson. Mm-hmm.
Peterson's set to start on Saturday. So by the time you're listening to this, you know what happened.
And Vince Velasquez may be starting for the Cubs on Sunday. I think with Boyd coming back, that would be a one-off, but that's a name we haven't seen in a long time. And the name alone is intriguing. Probably not much there, but we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be a guy who takes most of the innings if and when the Cubs end up having to do some kind of bullpen game, which we're starting to see plenty of at the moment.
Yes.
Unfortunately. All right. Well, we still got plenty of more news to go, especially, you know, David Peterson leaves the Mets. So the Mets have to do a bunch of other stuff and some more one-off notes to mention. We're going to do that after this break. All right. Well, I said the Mets doing a whole bunch of stuff this week. Again, some good, some not so good. First and foremost, the good. They welcome back Francisco Lindor officially in the second game of their doubleheader the other day. We mentioned that last week, and it came to fruition. It was disappointing as somebody who rosters him in the dailies moves league that he did not play in both games, and he went, I think, 0-for-5 in his return. But I digress. I'm still happy to have him back. He loses with his return, not as a 1-for-1, but very close to it. His middle infield partner, Marcus Semien, hits the IL with a hip flexor strain. And well, let's start with there. The whole with Semien out and Francisco Lindor back in, expectations on the Mets lineup moving forward. We saw an injury scare with Juan Soto as well this week. That seems to have passed us by, which, you know, thankfully, and thankfully for the Mets. But with Lindor back and Semien out, whether he was in any of your fantasy lineups is probably questionable, but he's now officially out of all lineups. Any insights from the Mets lineup before we get into all their pitching rotations changes?
Yeah, maybe. I think so, actually. So Francisco Lindor also sat on Thursday. I'm sure in your daily moves league, that was disappointing as well. Yes. Yeah. But I think that was we're easing him back in, right?
Sure.
I don't think we may see him miss another game over the weekend, early next week. But then I think he's going to be right back in there. And it appears because he was in the lineup at shortstop as Beatty moved over from third base to second base in that Thursday game. But Ronnie Mauricio played shortstop that day and then was at second base on Friday with Lindor at shortstop. This is the first that they've both been back with the roster since all of this is going on. So I think we are going to most days, of course, we can see Beatty move around. But I think most days we're going to see Mauricio at second base and Lindor at shortstop.
Yeah, and as we, I guess we're afraid of, Jared Young looks to be losing. But he's not gaining any playing time right. with Lindor coming back as well. Even with Lindor sitting, the one static thing that you know we all expected to happen, it seems to be the case. Bo Bichette is now officially back at third base. When he's not at third base, he's DHing, which he did today on Friday. Instead of moving back over to shortstop for whatever, or mixing and matching that. So I think we'll see Bichette pretty much at shortstop with the call up of Mauricio being the backup shortstop, as you mentioned as well. Well, the other things happening in New York for the Mets, as I alluded to, has to do with their rotation. Kodai Senga was moved to the bullpen. Zach Thornton was called up to start on Friday, and Christian Scott is expected to return this at some point this weekend. I haven't seen an exact role or if he'll actually start a game this weekend. But with that, Scott is basically replacing Senga, and Thornton just doing whether it could be a spot start or something that could lead to an additional start is yet to be seen. But with you know, trading away Peterson, not that he was starting a whole lot or going through a lot of innings. What kind of expectation do you expect Senga to stay in the bullpen here? Or do you think the Mets are going to need him to come back in that role?
Well, with Scott back, with Manaea getting more and more innings, McLean and Peralta, of course, Tobias Meyer is going to go on Sunday. They do still have, with that's a six-man rotation. Jason over at Roster Resource, after the off day on Thursday, does have Zach Thornton pitching at Atlanta next Friday. I am not certain whether I think New York is going to stick with this as a six-man or not, and Thornton get another start next week. If it has anything to do with his performance on Friday, absolutely, he's going to get that start. Here on Friday night, Thornton went six innings, five hits, one walk, seven Ks, one earned run. So very nice outing for Thornton on Friday evening. And it appears fairly likely he's earned another start next week.
Yeah, I mean, that's typically how these things work, right? It's like, yeah. All right, fine. You have to pick yourself out.
And this was supposed to be one game. Why'd you have to pitch so good? Right.
Why'd you pitch so good? We weren't expecting this. yeah, just interesting. You know, they go from so much depth to, well, I guess technically we have a six man, but do we really want a six man? And do we want all six of these men in that grouping? Nolan McLean obviously is stuck in here. Manaea with his recent success. And then Freddie Peralta being Freddie Peralta, they're pretty much, you know, stuck in place. But the other three spots of that six man rotation could be rotated in and out at any moment's notice.
And for what it's worth, on Roster Resource, so that's the probables that they have at Roster Resource on FanGraphs. But on the Mets page for their rotation, it only lists four pitchers: McLean, mm-hmm. Manaea, Peralta, and Thornton.
Well,
as one of the four.
They can't officially, you know, mention Christian Scott until they've
not yet. Yeah, but they have Myers in the bullpen, so they have Myers as being the odd man out if there is one.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that tracks. Even then, when he makes those, he is that long relief guy. It's like the last two outings, he's had 40 plus pitches, but obviously not starting any of those. So it makes sense in that regard. Are going over to the Athletics. They officially lose Zach Geloff. That's the bad news. The good news is that he has no broken bones. So he does have a right hand laceration, and a contusion is the official reason for the IL placement. But luckily x-rays came back with a lack of fracture. So which is a sigh of relief. He'll probably miss maybe the minimum, if not just a little bit over that, as long as his hand, you know, the swelling goes down and his hand heals up, but he will be out for a little bit. Any moves worth looking at with the Athletics losing Geloff for, you know, even just another week and a half?
It solidifies some things for Jeff McNeil. Max Muncy came back fairly recently, and with Jacob Wilson, he's missed games Thursday and Friday due to injury. So that's going to be intriguing. That if he's going to miss more time, that will be the bigger deal. We've seen Alika Williams, who was called up on Thursday, start both Thursday and Friday at shortstop for the Athletics. How long we're going to see him probably has a lot to do with the Jacob Wilson injury and what we find out more this weekend.
Yeah, we were just talking about the Athletics having a lot of mouths to feed in the infield across the board. And, you know, at least in the short term, that kind of sure.
They're back at home this week, so we're definitely interested. You know what the Athletics have done this season? Because this came about in minor league baseball during the COVID season, where they were playing 6-game series each week,
right? So they didn't have to travel.
To minimize the travel. Well, the minor leagues have continued to be at home or away 6 games each week, many of them, and that's what the Athletics have had to do because they're playing in a minor league ballpark that still has a minor league team. Yeah. They have been either all 6 games home or all 6 games away all week. And on one hand, I think, oh, that would be so nice if all major league teams did that. On the other hand, it probably take away an advantage that those of us that like to play matchups at least think we have.
Man, I wonder, however they end up doing the schedule each and every year, God bless them. It's you know, as somebody who does the schedule for my 12 team fantasy league, it's no easy task. So obviously it's nothing compared to what Major League Baseball has to do. But I do wonder if making less travel days across the board wouldn't be easier on everybody.
It would save money, and we know the owners are all about that,
right? Put that as a proposal in the next CBA. Going completely across the country to Tampa Bay, they lose, and this is going to be our little lightning round here at the end here. Tampa Bay loses Steven Matz to the IL with a left ankle sprain. Any indication that would have any bearing on anything for you or anybody playing fantasy right now?
I don't think so.
Yeah, fair enough. Matt's already being moved into a bullpen situation for Tampa Bay, not in any of our streaming options. Not as though we don't, as we'll get to a little bit later, those are far and few between anyway. One streaming option, he wasn't really an option because of the way he was pitching, but he's no longer an official option, is Lucas Giolito, as San Diego places him on the IL with elbow inflammation. They do recall JP Sears to take his place. Any interest in Sears?
Unfortunately, probably not. Because even if it did appear he was going to get into a game as a starter this week, which it does not at the moment, at Wrigley and at the LA Dodgers aren't a couple of ballparks I want a guy pitching in this week like JP Sears. You know, I've always liked JP Sears. If he gets some starts in the right matchups, I'll be all about him, but I'm not interested this week. Mm-hmm.
He has made his MLB debut. He's played this year. Isn't like the first call up, so he should be available pretty much everywhere. Whether or not he, you know, Ross Research seems to think he'll be in the rotation, but not slated, as you mentioned, not slated to actually start quite yet, or at least nothing announced. Seattle got back a piece of their lineup in Randy Arozarena. Connor Joe was optioned to make room. Any other expected, you know, dominoes with Arroz Arena being in the fold on a regular basis for Seattle?
No, I'm just very curious because I have Arroz Arena on a couple of my rosters, and there's been quite a bit of talk about how a lot of his underlying numbers are worse than they have been historically, in spite of him having an amazing season thus far. So I'm going to keep a very close eye and make sure that we don't slip into the one of those Gene Segura situations where we're just throwing Arroz Arena in our lineup every week and he's not continuing to do what he has done this season, because the underlying numbers, he hasn't. So it's definitely worth keeping a close eye on, make sure he continues to do what he's been doing for your team.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, Arroz Arena has started every game back, all four games, and he was in the leadoff spot for the first time this season today against the lefty, playing left or starting in left field. Their whole lineup looked weird or different today than it does on a normal basis. Everybody, basically, J.P. Crawford moved down into the sixth hole, and everybody else kind of either moved up or down one slot with Arroz Arena in that leadoff spot. But, it's interesting to see Arroz Arena hadn't batted anything higher than third all season, and now all of a sudden in that leadoff spot. So, I don't know that it'll stick, and maybe it's a thing they only do against lefties, but we'll have to, keep an eye out.
Went 1-for-4 with a double and a walk. So,
I mean, getting on base.
400 on base. That's good.
There you go. and then two elite shortstop options for us one elite and one, very good. And he came back with a bang. Connor Griffin back with the Pirates, hit a home run today on his return And then Ellie De La Cruz back in the lineup earlier this week for Cincinnati. Either one of them, again, I'm assuming you're putting both of them back in your lineups as soon as you realize that they were back or whenever your league allowed it. But with them back with their respective teams and their respective lineups, is there anybody that you were kind of leaning on that you're expecting to lose some playing time?
Well, maybe, because I have some interest in Jared Triolo. Pittsburgh has a fairly decent week ahead, and I was looking at him as a speed play this week, but he may be the one that loses time here. Now, here with the first game with Griffin back, he shifts from shortstop back over to third base, where he was the close to, if not everyday shortstop prior to this. So that's very intriguing. And then we see Nick Gonzalez has been playing third base, and he's out of the lineup. He typically does not play versus lefties, so we're not getting a lot of information tonight. We have to watch this over the weekend, but I'm hopeful that Jared Triolo is not the one to lose out on playing time, because I have some interest in him for this upcoming week.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting when they come back and it's against the lefty. You're like, can I trust the moves here?
The one I'm not worried about is Brandon Lau. He's hit his way into holding the spot. At the beginning of the season, he may have been in consideration to miss time, but he's played well enough and holding on to that two spot in the lineup. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, fair enough. Edwin Arroyo, who has been filling in for De La Cruz, is still around, was not, sent down, but he has missed two of the three games that De La Cruz has been back for. So it seems to be the obvious
similar situation. McLean moving back over to second base. Yeah.
I mean, McLean's not exactly doing himself any favors production wise. So that's not to say that will stick, but in the short sample size that we have in the last 3 days, that's what we got. That's what we have to work off of. All right, Kevin, we got, a lot more news than I expected, to be honest, getting through that. And then we got to get into some actual recommendations. We're going to do that after this break. All right, we're back. Of course, you're still listening to On the Wire, and we thank you for doing so. You should also be listening to the First Pitch podcast and the Plus Pitch podcast right here on the Pitcher List Podcast Network for daily information regarding all the highlights, news, and observations from every day's worth of games. And of course, starting pitching highlights and recommendations for streaming throughout the course of the week. But with all that, you can listen to those on the side. Right now, you're listening to us, and we thank you for doing so. Kevin, let's get right into our power recommendations. I'm gonna milk these hitting ones as much as we can because I'm dreading talking about pitching options. But let's go. Let's make up all the dread from the pitching side with as many home runs and RBI as we possibly can. Who are you looking at for those categories?
Yeah. A couple, these guys have all been around, but there's some availability and they're picking up. Cincinnati, nice schedule this week, and 5 out of 6 righties, I believe. Nathaniel Lowe is playing versus every righty, hitting home runs. He's on pace to get to close to 30 home runs this season. If he played every day, but he doesn't. He plays versus all righties. So, I love him this week. Jorge Soler is back, already a couple bombs in his first 3 games back, I believe, for the Angels. And he is only 67% rostered in 15s, 29% in 12s. And then a guy that for the past couple of weeks, Adam, I've really wanted to talk about this guy. I promise. But the playing time just hasn't quite been there. And 2 weeks ago, when I first started paying attention to Heriberto Hernandez down in Miami, I was really wishing that he was getting more playing time. He was playing versus lefties and then maybe 1 out of 3 righties, 1 out of 4 even. Not much at all. A couple of weeks ago, he ran off 4 straight starts versus righties playing left field. And since then, not every game versus righties, but over half, and against every lefty. Miami has a 7-game week. Listen to this schedule, Adam. Miami has 4 games at Colorado and 3 games at West Sacramento this week. Mm-hmm. Heriberto Hernandez will be in the lineup definitely versus those 3 lefties, and the way things have been going against at least half of the righties, so at least 5, and I'm hoping for 6 games out of Heriberto Hernandez this week in those ballparks, and I expect home runs from Hernandez this week.
This is why, like, 2 of the top 7 recommendations that PL Bot spit out at me are Miami Marlins.
Yes, that lineup, the schedule is amazing. Griffin Conine, yep, I have him under opportunity where I should have put Hernandez. Yeah,
and Javier Sanoja, who's not playing every day, but with that kind of schedule, could, you know, both of these guys could find their way into the projected.
Graham Pauly came back on Friday. He's going to be available. He's probably going to get some third base playing time.
Yeah. If you have access to the PL projections, of course, you know that they do them by the week, by the day, and by the next day. And so it's just interesting to see it broken down. I'm like, all right, yep. I wonder why these are. And you're like, oh, okay. Let's see. Park factor and run factor. And for all these guys, I'm like, there it is. There is your siren alarm emoji, all 3. Of a 110 park factor, 114 pitcher factor, and a 125 run factor based on their schedule for the next week. So yeah, definitely worth keeping an eye on all of your Marlins options that might be on your wire. All right. Well, still, yeah, plenty of, well, not plenty, but, you know, enough power to talk about all of your options here. Throwing it out there as a couple other names that stick out here from PL Bot, Ryan Ward from the Dodgers with, you know, some injuries that they've been dealing with the Dodgers as well, could find himself with a couple more at-bats for the Dodgers. And Let's see. I mean, Tyler O'Neill is always at the top of this of the PL bot recommendation list in the power
because
category.
We project him based on him being healthy, but we don't see that very often. Unfortunately, it's so frustrating.
All right. Well, enough talk about power then, Kevin. We need some more speed to go along with those bombs. Who's stealing some bases and scoring some runs by your look?
I mentioned Triolo, but a guy that we know can steal bases. He just hasn't been able to hit for average in his MLB career. Taylor Walls, but he is the everyday shortstop for Tampa. You've brought him up a couple times this season, and he is very streaky when it comes to batting average. Over the past couple weeks, he's hit in the 270s, and he does this. He goes on little hitting streaks. We haven't gotten a home run from him this year. We typically get a stray homer once in a while from him. He's had as many as 8 in 2 different seasons, none yet this year, but he gets on base. So Tampa Bay, the defense he plays at shortstop, and he gets on base at a 325 clip this season, which is nice. That's 35 points above his career average. He is going to be in this lineup every day. He's up to 12 stolen bases on the season right now. Projections all have him for double-digit additional rest of season. We're at that halfway point. So, yeah, we're looking at a, 20 to 25 stolen base guy on the year, which means he's got another 10 to 12 to go.
Yeah. Tampa Bay should be, I mean, they have the 6 games, but they're facing 5 out of 6 righties over the course of the week, which also makes his teammate, Richie Palacios, an option with 32% rostership in 15 teamers and only 4% in 12 teamers. And Palacios has been pretty much sitting against all of your lefties, but with all those righties coming up, should have plenty of opportunity to run throughout the course of the next week. So
Tyler Freeman has been in 5 of the last 7 lineups for Colorado. They get those 4 games against Miami. Remember, Miami is horrible at holding runners. Mm-hmm. So that Tyler Freeman is in play this week in my mind.
Fair. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of all that opportunity, pitching matchups and all that, let's get into the opportunity section here. As I mentioned, the Tampa Bay has 6 games and they are the majority. Most teams do have 6, but there are a handful of 7 game work weeks with the White Sox, Cleveland, Miami, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Colorado, the Dodgers and San Diego all having 7 games. Your Kansas City Royals are making me disappointed, Kevin, because I think this is the first time this season we're seeing somebody with a 7-day week with only 5 games. Kansas City Royals, only team with just 5 games on the week with 2 off days. Colorado is going to be hosting all week with their 7 games. 4 versus the Miami Marlins we talked about earlier, and then 3 with the Giants in town over the weekend. Cincinnati will be splitting their time 4 away in Milwaukee, but then coming back home to host the Baltimore Orioles over the weekend in Great American Small Park. And as you said earlier, the Athletics have all of their 6 games at home with the hosting the Dodgers and hosting Miami, as we talked about. There are some weird off days, which I hate, but there are 4.
It messes up the weekend.
It really does.
Especially if they're facing a righty and a lefty in their 2-game weekend.
Mm-hmm. So we have 4 teams have an off day on Friday, including Detroit, Kansas City, Texas, and Philadelphia. So keep in mind all that. Kansas City, it's like, I say you had 2 off days, but you're thinking, oh, Monday and Thursday, fine. But no, they actually lose a game in both the first half of the week and the second half of the week for your, NFBC formats as well. Miami's 7 games are, as we talked about, very interesting as they are in Colorado and in West Sacramento. So with all of that, Kevin, and anything else you want to consider for an opportunity, who has a good opportunity ahead of themselves this coming week?
Yeah, I do have Griffin Conine. 4 of the 5 games he has been back, he has been in the lineup, and I believe all of them. Two of the three games versus righties, he has been in the two hole, including on Tuesday evening. I believe his couple of home runs he has on the season came very early in the season before he missed all of this time. With that schedule that Miami has this week, somebody that could be hitting in the two hole in half or more of those four games they face versus righties. He did drop to the seven hole versus lefties, but it's just such a great schedule. And being on the IL so long, Griffin Conine has some availability, even though he did come back last Sunday. He's still got availability out there. And then, with Colorado being a home, right, we're getting into July this week. It's going to be hot, and we're playing in the ballparks we want to be playing in if right. we want to see the ball flying. And a guy that doesn't play quite every day, but does play most days recently, and kind of so-so. A little bit of everything, but not really great at anything. When he does sit, it is typically versus righties. Colorado is set to face six out of seven righties this week. But I think Kyle Carroll still gets in probably four games, and he's been doing a little bit. This is the kind of guy that I use in my leagues when I need a guy in a spot that I don't want to hurt me in anything. I don't need help anywhere. Kyle Karros is a guy I would use this week in a situation like that. And it's due to that opportunity and the schedule and where they're playing, because he's not going to get as many plate appearances as I would typically want for a guy I'm using for his opportunity that week. But I think he will do some things with that opportunity and not hurt me anywhere with his opportunity.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, you got to take whatever opportunity you can take at this point as well. And we talked about a couple other opportunities that are happening, and just due to injury, due to, you know, circumstance, just if Anthony Seigler keeps, you know, it looks like he's solidified that spot. And with Marcelo Meyer out, it doesn't seem like there's any opportunity for the Red Sox to even consider taking him out. And he just had three straight multi-hit games for them. He hasn't hit a home run yet. Like you said, he hasn't stolen a base yet. But with more reps and more consistency, that definitely could come in short order. So keep an eye if you're desperate for a middle or an infielder or middle infielder help. He did get into a game at third base as they moved around a little bit, but I don't expect that to get him corner infield eligibility, nor do you won't probably need him in that position anyway.
Another guy. Yeah. Sorry, Adam, but I wanted, before you went on to the next category, to make sure I got this in there, because this isn't just him. This probably affects a guy that's had a really nice couple of days. Elliot Ramos is expected back on Monday, if not before, for San Francisco. Unfortunately, that probably means we don't see Victor Barrichello anymore. And he's had an amazing couple of days with those couple of big home runs, a solo home run in a game they won 1-0, and then a walk-off home run in a game they won 2-1. That's all the offense that he, and he's probably about to lose all of his playing time, unfortunately. Yeah. But Elia Ramos is the guy to go out and get if he's available in your league.
Yeah, especially with, yeah, as he's expected to come back. And he should be readily available for all the time that he had missed already.
Unless Barrichello takes Drew Gilbert's plate appearances. Barrichello hit the ground running. Drew Gilbert's struggled a little bit. This could be interesting. When you do that in your two of your three starts after a guy goes down. Yeah, he's been on the roster and he's played sporadically throughout the year, but he's been playing like once a week tops throughout the year.
It is interesting just because, yeah, again, with the pattern that you see, if you look at the lineup over the last week, you know, Gilbert didn't start the last three games. Barrichello did. They're not one for one for the position. Other players have played center field with Gilbert not starting, between Young Ho Lee moving over and Jonah Cox taking.
Yeah, Jonah Cox will get it versus lefties. Yeah.
Right. And so, does that mean, you know, Lee is moving to center field against righties? Is that the move that they're making? Well, again, we'll see what happens when Ramos comes back.
I want to modify my statement. Keep an eye on Barracudo the rest of the weekend, him and Gilbert, because as well as he has performed, it's only three games and two of them specifically.
They're just loud. But, they're just loud.
Yes, they were very loud. And, you know, that's it's going to be tough for a GM to tell a manager, you don't have this guy available anymore.
Yeah, well, with all the moves that we've seen this week, who's to say that they'll have the same manager or the GM by the end of the weekend? The Angels.
And specifically in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Angels, the Mets, they're all going through changes, and it's not just trades and player related. So those headlines are going to start coming through a lot more as we head closer and closer to the trade deadline as well. So it's just the time of year when teams start getting so frustrated, and they weren't even the first ones. Obviously, Cora left Boston. It's like when a team gets frustrated enough with what they're putting out on the field, regardless of whose fault it actually is, somebody takes the fall for it. All right. Well, lots of hitting to consider. We do have to try to wade through our options on the pitching side, and we are going to do that right after this break. All right, Kevin, I've been dreading this only because of our pre-show conversation. The streaming options are limited, and they have been, but they're not getting any better. As we're seeing, like the trades that are being made to fill their gap in the major league team, it's no different. Like with the Cubs having to trade for David Peterson to fill the gap in their option, that's the equivalent of that's their streamer, right? That's what they're streaming at this point. And so if major league teams are having trouble with it, how are we supposed to do anything with that?
Right. Guys like Matthew Boyd coming back can help a little bit. Cade Cavalli for the Washington Nationals has I've been pretty darn good most of the season. Couple of bad outings, but he is at the Red Sox, which, as we mentioned earlier, I could between my Royals and your Red Sox, Adam, they're in the same spot, so we can talk bad about them, right? So I like that audience. Here's a name, and unfortunately, it probably doesn't mean a lot till next week, even though he has quite a bit of availability, and that's Hunter Green. He's going to pitch this weekend, the next weekend, probably versus Baltimore. That's when we expect to see Hunter Green back. He's available in 50% of main events. That's because he was injured by the time we were drafting main events. He's only available in about 30-something percent of 12-team online championships, leagues that were drafted sooner. He's not available in many of those leagues. Check, but he's been picked up where he was drafted for the most part. So in many of those leagues, this is going to be a big money spend next week, but check for this week and see if he's snuck through in your league to this point with being available.
Fair enough. We talked a little bit about him, but like Zach Thornton did enough to gain that start, and not going to be a two starter, but like we're going to take what we can get. What's your thoughts on Zach Thornton or spending some money on Zach Thornton?
The only thing I don't like about it is at Atlanta, and we're not 100% that he's going to get that start, but we're to the point where I like that better than some of the veterans that are available. Right? I've eaten some of what Zach Gallen's done recently. That's not fun, Adam.
No.
I've eaten some of what Nick Lodolo's done lately, and it's not fun. I think I'd rather have Zach Thornton in my lineup.
Yeah.
Even at Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we know what's going to happen with the other guys. They're going to continue to get blown up, right?
Right, right. At least this one, you can hold on to whatever shred of hope that you can find.
I have a question for you. This one's Aaron Nola. He's one of those guys. But he gets Pittsburgh, who's been pretty good. He gets them, and then at Kansas City, it has not been good at all. If you're not starting Aaron Nola this week, he should not be on your roster. That's all right. I say about that.
That's the adage, right? I mean, those aren't terrible matchups. And if it's a two start, oh man, it's hard to bench somebody like that for that kind of a two start with that kind of a name. And sometimes you, if you're, yeah, I am in agreement. If you're in if your roster's in a situation where you can bench Aaron Nola, then you should probably be looking elsewhere for a different bench spot.
Seattle, with this piggybacking everybody, but it's not one guy doing the piggyback before or after everybody. This is how Roster Resource has this playing out this week, this coming up. So they have on Saturday, Logan Gilbert's going to open, and then Emerson Hancock. They have on Tuesday, Bryce Miller opening, and then Luis Castillo. And we've seen that pairing.
Yes.
And then next weekend, Brian Wu and George Kirby. I'm intrigued by this, right? Because I am so intrigued by it. 15 years ago, Bill James told us that we were working towards, and he had this article that went out and spelled it out, right? Like, this wasn't new that we're not seeing starting pitchers go as deep as they used to. Yeah, people reminisce about the 50s when everybody went nine innings, and then, yeah, now nobody does. But it's been a constant trajectory to get here, right? There hasn't been all of a sudden a big jump. And this article came out the year Tampa first started using the opener. And the premise of the article was that what Major League Baseball teams were working towards was to have their pitchers pitch three innings every 3 days. And that would be more efficient and they would get better results. I think so. That's kind of what Seattle's trying to do here. They're not doing it every 3 days, but they're doing it so their guys only need their typical 4 days off and they can get a sixth guy in there. I'm intrigued to see how this works out, but this is going to play havoc with our fantasy teams. I haven't looked closely enough yet, but have the openers been going five innings? Are we sitting Brian Wu because he's not going to, well, he's got a two step. So we aren't sitting Brian Wu. Would we sit Bryce Miller because he's only getting the one appearance and he's the opener?
Well, the first time Seattle did this with, obviously with Miller and Castillo, they both went four innings and they both did very well. Like
And I think that's what Seattle wants.
Of course.
So but I think we have to pay close attention to this. And
I don't
not
think any of them are being treated as actual like openers. Like, I don't expect any of them to go less than 2 to 3 innings. Like, that would, maybe if they're struggling. But yeah, I would expect everybody to go at least three. But I'm looking at this
but
as
the
a
question
true
is five. Yeah, the question is, are they going to go five?
Yes, right.
Right. Now, so many of our leagues, the pitching's so depleted. We're going to talk about a category here in a little bit where we're talking about where we typically talk about middle relievers getting us some innings with good ratios. Yeah, even if Brian Wu didn't have a two-step this coming week, I'd throw him hoping he gets four innings of those ratios for me before I throw a reliever in my lineup for that purpose. But this is something I think we need to monitor going forward more closely than I have, at least. People listening may be like, I've been paying attention to this for weeks, but I started realizing that the opener may not be getting the innings we want in Seattle.
Yeah, well, definitely something to see how I'm curious to see how long they hold on to it. Right. It's one of those things where it's like you just expect somebody to, you know, it's pitching. You expect somebody to get hurt at some point, and then they like, do they just abandon this? Do they go straight five man, or do they bring somebody else into the rotation? And I use that with quotations here. And so we'll see how serious Seattle actually is when they're, you know, push comes to shove, and they have to make a decision. Well, speaking of ratios, we've been eating the ratios with some of these starts, as we talked about. How are we going to, what are we going to use as our chaser to make it a little bit less painful?
My favorite of the names we brought up recently is AJ Minter. He's doing what we have seen AJ Minter do when he's going good. ERA and whip, strikeouts, when never know when he might sneak us a win or a save. Love him. A new name this week, AJ Blubaugh is doing it in Houston as well. And he gets typically three of his last four appearances have been two innings, and he typically gets a couple of those a week. There are many weeks that he has gotten us four innings. So the ratio, we get some volume for that ratio help and volume for strikeouts as well.
Nice. I first you said AJ Minter, and I'm like, I'm looking at the outline and I'm like, did you say the wrong AJ? And then you went into another AJ. I'm like, you just want all the AJs.
I didn't even realize they were both AJ.
Yeah. Love it. All right. Well, let's, if we iron out our ratios little by little, it'll, you know, it can make all the difference by the end of the year. But one area that we always talk about is the hardest to come back from is saves. So if we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, which we are, what situations do you have your eye on for the saves category, Kevin?
Yeah, it's so I said I didn't want to mess with Cincinnati, but there's leagues where we have to, unfortunately, because the saves have been all spread out between so many guys this season on many teams. And the sad thing about this is it appeared Santian was kind of settling in and taking over the job again. Like we thought he might have multiple times this season. He hits the IL. Brock Burke, we thought could make this jump before. He's one of three lefties in this bullpen. TJ Antone, we brought up a couple of weeks ago. Pierce Johnson, kind of like Brock Burke, we've wanted to see in the ninth inning and never for an extended time. Caleb Ferguson, another lefty, is listed as one of the committee on roster resource. But I probably Antone or Burke, I would take a stab on here. But for a closer, I actually want that I think we can spec on right now is with your Red Sox. I think everybody expects Chapman to get traded.
Sure.
Whitlock's already fairly heavily rostered. People have been making this spec for a while because the closers are the ones we see traded a little early, right? Lots of times, right? He could go any day now. There's a running joke.
Like every other start, every other time he like comes out there, he comes and starts giving everybody hugs. And you're just like, wait, is this the day? Is this the day? It's like, why are you giving everybody hugs? Oh, you just like your teammates, maybe.
And I think it's probably Whitlock, but we heard a lot of speculation last season about Slayton. Cora really liked Slayton last season coming into the year. And that's the two Rick Graham has listed on his bullpen report at pitcher list. So either one. I prefer Whitlock, but either one's worth a spec here. Whitlock, I think they're the best bets for specs this week is if you can nail the Boston guy.
There's just not, because you said earlier, there's especially in the American League, there's so many teams that, quote, are in it. Even, you know, the Red Sox that are one of those teams that have to jump over everybody else to get there. They're just playing so poorly that you can't expect that to happen. It's the only obvious situation.
Edwin Diaz is still 100% rostered. We don't expect to see him till after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. Pagan is close to 100% rostered. He's not back yet. This is how bad saves are. People are holding these guys, and if they do get dropped, they're swiped up immediately by somebody that does have room to hold them or makes room to hold them.
Well, I mean, we're at that point. We're at the end of June. We're just about a month away from the trade deadline. You have to start speculating on those situations now, or at least from now all the way until the end of July. And as I was trying to say, like, this is the only one that's obvious, right? That, you know, Chapman is going to be traded. Everybody else is just like, well, he could be traded, or maybe they don't trade, and maybe they trade for somebody else. And like, I mean, if Chapman gets traded, when Chapman gets traded, you have to assume he's moving into a situation where he stays the closer, though, right?
No, I don't assume that.
No, you don't. Okay.
No, I think the top teams We've seen the Dodgers do this. We've seen the Yankees did it last season. They brought in everybody's closer at the trade deadline, right? Teams want deep bullpens for the way the postseason works these days. So I do not make the assumption that Chapman holds his closer position.
The situation that I'm looking at as my option, and only because these teams have made quite a bit of trades in recent history, is actually the White Sox. And if Chapman were to go to the White Sox on his deal, he's the closer there. And it just seems like that could be the perfect spot for him, based on not only their situation, but with, you know, all the goodwill, all the goodness that the White Sox have given their fans this year, and how many games they're actually winning and the surprises that they're throwing in there. I do believe, yeah, they're still at the top of the division. They're a game above Cleveland. And if I don't see them making like a big move, and I don't think it's going to take a lot to get Chapman from the Red Sox either. And so I could see that being like just the thing that's like, hey, you know what? Let's have some fun with this. And then that situation, obviously, Chapman stays in that closer position.
Another place where he would be the closer right now anyway, and probably at any point, is the other team in Chicago, and things went pretty well last time they went and got him.
It's true. that is true. Well, as somebody who has Chapman in more than one place, I am hoping for one of those situations when the trade.
I do not blame you a bit. It's bad enough to be without saves. It's so much worse to have them and then them get taken away from you.
Taken away. Yes, exactly. All right. Well, we got one more section, as we always do, our wild card section, but I am going to make everybody wait just another minute or two as we take another quick break. All right, Kevin, we waited long enough. You've had some really fun wild card speculative ads over the course of the last couple of weeks. Keep it rolling this week.
Yeah, this one is fun, and he's similar to some of the other guys we've talked about recently. And one of the similarities is the first question you're going to have is, where is he going to play?
Right?
And that is definitely an issue for, there we go. Goodness, I can't believe I forgot. Hector Rodriguez, I've liked this guy a lot. I think we talked about him in the offseason, fairly early in the offseason, just a little bit. But we haven't talked to him since the season began. And he is in the minor leagues doing exactly what he needed to do to get this call. We are seeing Hector Rodriguez with 18 home runs, hitting .289, 6 stolen bases thrown in there. He's already at 60 runs and 50 RBI. Yeah, we know AAA ballparks. We understand that, but he's been doing this for quite some time now, but he's taken that leap with the game power. This is something I keep seeing with some of these prospects that are all of a sudden they're at this point this season, they have the number of home runs they hit all of last season. That's been the common thread with all these guys we've been bringing up recently, and they're growing into that game power. I believe we're seeing the same thing this season as prospects report on FanGraphs: 40 current, 50 future for game power. And I think we're beginning to see him play into that. Good walk rates, great strikeout rates. Projections don't have him projected for many games. They don't expect to see him this year, but we can see the ratios. 20% or below strikeout rate for a guy that's developing this kind of power is amazing. The projections all have him for right about a .250 batting average. That's amazing for somebody coming into Major League Baseball for their debut with this kind of power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were right. My first question,
what is he doing? Yeah. Dunn's been playing well, and stealing bases for us. And the guy that's already not quite getting everyday playing time that probably deserves it is Noelvi Marte. So right now there's not a spot for Rodriguez, but I do think we see him this season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously their normal everyday outfield is done in center field, Blade in left, and Marte most of the time in right field.
And they have Steer if they need somebody.
They have some flexibility with other players that obviously can go back and forth. Marte could go back and forth if they were, you know, trying to force the issue as well. But Rodriguez being basically a corner outfield guy, I'm not worried. You know, he's not going to come in and knock Dunn around. Dunn's pretty much their only true center field option. Dane Meyer's still on the roster, kind of filling in every, you know, once every, you know, 2 weeks. Ultimately,
I'm gonna fight a wild card next week that's not 5'9", 5'10", 200 pounds though. It seems like I have a type.
You have a type. Hey, some of those have worked.
I like these short, stocky guys.
Yeah. That can hit a lot of bombs. Exactly. That's not a bad profile, especially if you're looking for some power.
They have shorter swings.
There you go. All right. Well, cool. Keep an eye on Hector Rodriguez and the situation in Cincinnati and whether or not, you know, they make an opening for him in the near future before the All-Star break. But in the meantime, Kevin, close us out here with any other last end of June pieces of advice.
We talked about a lot of this throughout this episode and recent episodes, and we've kind of brought it to different things, like talking about not getting complacent and thinking that everything is still happening the way it was happening 3 weeks ago. We've talked about that with ballpark factors this season. Some of these, it's crazy to me to see Boston so low on the ballpark factor thing for this season, but there's something changed. Air currents are moving some way in that stadium, or some modification they did that's affecting things a way we didn't expect. Milwaukee, that I always thought of Milwaukee as a hitter's ballpark. It's kind of down on the list. Pittsburgh, I always thought as a pitcher park. It's up near the top of the list for hitters this season. So we talked about that. We talked about with specific players, and I kind of steal it from Bubba in the Bloom, bring it up Gene Segura all the time when we're talking about those kinds of players, but we talked about it with that. But then with these schedules, right, we just talked about Seattle pitching, and I don't think I have paid enough attention to that yet. I plan on digging into that over the weekend. Make some decisions for next week. We talked about looking 2 weeks ahead for starting pitching, right? We brought up Sean Burke last week, and we really wanted him for this week. He's 100% rostered this week.
So is
in 15s and 12s. Everybody is looking 2 weeks ahead. We probably got to start looking 3 weeks ahead. But who knows who's pitching 3 weeks from now, right? Sure. So I know this is getting repetitive, but just keep at it, keep up on things, because not only do we have a big holiday weekend coming with the holiday actually falling on the weekend, there's going to be a lot of people that don't do FAB next week. They're going to plan on it. They're going to consume some beverages and forget to do FAB, right?
Sure.
And football. This is the bit. We're in the peak of draft season. I think I don't do it anymore, but I think the one football league I draft's coming up in a couple of weeks, and that's kind of the peak of the season time. We're really at least getting into the prep for him, right? So now is the time, if we are paying attention to, I don't want to say grind, but now is the time. If we're paying attention to all these little things that add up to a big thing, it's going to end up being a big advantage. Looking 2-3 weeks ahead, not thinking we know, paying attention to things like we mentioned with Randy Arozarena, make sure he picks up where he left off, because his underlying metrics weren't very good, even though the results were amazing. Keep up on those types of things. The guy I brought up, a couple of guys a few weeks ago, Michael Massey was one. I forget the other one, that results were better than we expect from those guys. And they've kept it up. But like Michael Massey in his situation, the past 2 weeks, and again, I believe, let me double check really quickly, the Royals have faced a lot of left-handed pitching. And now this week, with only a five-game week, two of them are lefties. third week in a row, Michael Massey's not a good start in fantasy, but Michael Massey has been crushing the baseball. He's a top 10 second baseman in fantasy baseball with the limited playing time. So keep an eye on Michael Massey going forward and guys like that, that are performing better than we think they have been. And then our categories, right? Some of the categories aren't playing out the way we thought. We don't need as many saves to finish in the top five in the category because it's not just us that has to deal with them being all spread out, right? We don't need as many of them. Stolen bases, you know, they skyrocketed the last couple of years. They're still up there. There's so many guys just stealing base every time they get on. How much can we sacrifice in a category to gain in another one? I have gotten to the point where I got a lot of stolen bases out of Nassim Nunez. I think he's up to about 30 now. Got a lot of them, started benching him because of the low batting average, but then he started hitting a little bit. So I started sneaking him in half weeks at a time. Like just all the little things, and don't think you know without refreshing and seeing things are still happening the way you think they were.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Great advice going into the holiday weekend as well. Just being able to keep paying attention. Even
if you're someone that has big plans next weekend, make sure you do a thorough fab this week. And make sure you are 100% ready to go for this week. Maybe you won't have a whole lot to worry about next week.
Yeah, I mean, lots of stuff can still happen next week that will force your hand. But as soon as you see that happen, don't just set your lineup for Friday. Set your lineup for Friday and put in a bid so that you don't have to, if you do imbibe a little bit too much on Sunday next week, you don't forget to hit that save button. And maybe you bid a little bit more than you would have, but that's only because you're afraid you're going to forget about it. And then if you don't forget about it, just bring your bid down and or adjust accordingly. Yeah.
And bids in general are going down. Doesn't take as much money.
Sure.
Not just because people are running out, but we are seeing less people put in their bids each week because of everything we've talked about. Yeah, less people are bidding at this point. I overbid on a lot of guys last week, and it wasn't a lot of money.
Hard way.
Even the low bids were way too high.
All right. Well, with all that and everything else, that's going to do it for episode 260 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.